Good morning, everybody. And I'm glad to see, well, at least a few of you back. The room was definitely more crowded yesterday. And there was an AMSIC party yesterday. But I'm still happy that, actually, you made 9 o'clock on a morning after the AMSIC party. So thanks for that. Welcome back to the Address Policy Working Group. The working group chairs is still Sandra and myself. The session is still webcast, so the usual caveats apply. Speak your name, speak to the microphone, and so on. This is what we are going to do today. We will have a short wrap-up by Nigel Titley of what was discussed in the NCC Services Working Group yesterday. So the text on here is actually what I had on the agenda before, but we are doing it a bit different. Since the discussion has been had, we just get the results. And then we will get presented these four protocols and discuss what we think about it and how to move forward. If there's time, which I can't promise at this point, there will be a couple of minutes in the end, definitely not a full hour, to mention things that you might want to see as a formal policy proposal eventually, but just mention it informally to get some feedback on your ideas and anything else that might come up. Okay, first thing is Nigel Titley. Nigel, if I may ask you.
Okay, just a couple of minutes to wrap up on the discussion yesterday. You all know about this policy proposal. It's about the RIPE NCC setting out guidelines for how LIRs can receive certificates for their PA space. And this proposal sets out how this should be done. I'm not going to go through the proposal. The status is the RIPE NCC is ready to partially deploy this, in other words, just a portal implementation. Needs further implementation. Actually, I'm not sure whether this is the right. Oh, yes, this is right. Okay. Let's go back. Okay. The main concern is that certification plus secure routing effectively can give a big red button for the internet. You can actually turn off a route announcement. You can only do this, of course, if ISPs are cooperating altogether, so forth. It's like filtering. It could have profound implications for the internet as we know it. So there was quite a bit of discussion on this, which was rather nice. The mood I got from the room was that there was cautious approval, that in general this gives more advantages than disadvantages. But that we really, really need to get down and work out exactly what the ramifications are. One of the arguments was this is only a tool, it's like filtering, you use it if you want. But of course, if everybody uses it, then it becomes de facto mandatory. If you don't use it, then you won't get any customers. The RIPE NCC must take the project further. This is only really a start. This is toddler's first steps. And it's missing a lot of functionality. In particular, it's missing the up-down protocol, which is needed for delegation of keys and so forth. And we need to investigate all the ramifications. So again, that was an action on the RIPE NCC to get together a list of documents and policies that need looking at and changing. As it says in this slide, set of documents, policies and procedures to cover up all the issues brought up, action on the RIPE NCC, And we do need to plan how to go forward on the certification project, which is only really in its first stages. It's usable, but only just. And that's it. Nothing else? Any questions? Anybody awake? No? Right, good.
Okay, thank you, Nigel, for wrapping up where we are with this today. For our policy process regarding 2008-08, this means, well, it's stalled. We will wait for the certification project to proceed, for the community to come up with some sort of directions on where to take this, and then revisit the proposal, either rewrite it or abandon it and have a new one. So just for the records, 2008-08 is not going further just now. So we now come to the first of the new proposals of this year, 2009-1. Without further ado, I give the microphone to Axel, who's going to present who, why, what, and what's the benefit, and so on.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. Okay, this then is about the global policy proposal for the allocation of V4 blocks to the regional internet registries, 2009-1. This has been assembled by a couple of concerned people who know a bit about the registries and how they deal with the RIRs and what we are faced with occasionally, what is missing, and what we hear out in the world. We currently do not have a global policy on IPv4 that would cover any reclaimed address space. Basically, the RIRs might or might not reclaim address space, and then it sits there, which is, in principle, not bad. However, then, if we assemble sort of piles here and nothing there, there is no mechanism currently to distribute not used space among the RIRs. So we cannot just decide that, oh, we have so much space left over, we would like to give some to Aaron, for instance. We can't do that. So what we thought up is a mechanism to basically effectively be able to do this. The idea is to give space back to IANA and then to reallocate from IANA in the more or less usual way to the RIRs. And this is just about the mechanism and the numbers and how quickly and how fast that needs to be done by IANA in the end. That is a procedure and will be defined later. So we have a couple of definitions here. We call this recovered address space. It's reclaimed space. It's space that is returned voluntarily to the RIRs, and it does not include freshly reclaimed space after, for instance, termination of contracts with LIRs. Then we speak about IPv4 address holdings at some point in time. That means to be the space that is unallocated at the RIRs, and does not include reserved space that is reserved for later allocation, which is straightforward. There are two phases to this. Phase one is before the depletion of IPv4 at the IANA. Basically, IANA prepares for this, sets up a recovered IPv4 pool, and the RIRs start returning IPv4 address space as they have it available. Return it in chunks every 3 months, and only if they have aggregated blocks of /24 or larger. Now, at some point in time, we all run out of IPv4 address space the usual way, as we all expected. What then happens is that IANA obviously announces that, well, we don't have anything anymore. We recall the current global policy that governs allocation of IPv4 address space to the RIRs. And this policy will come into effect. What we do then, there's an allocation period defined that's basically 6 months and starts at more or less arbitrary day in the year, the 1st of March, and goes until September, and then the second allocation period per year starts. Then we have an IPv4 allocation unit defined, and that is a little bit geeky maybe. We thought this is something that needs to be flexible, depends a little bit on how much space overall is in this pool, and we thought the allocation unit should be roughly about a tenth of the IPv4 address pool. Then we have 5 RIRs, then every RIR could get one of those. Then that basically would mean every half year, half of the available addresses in that pool at IANA will be given out again. Allocations to the RIRs, that will be done one allocation per RIR per allocation period, so one allocation every half year if an RIR needs it, if an RIR is eligible. And it would be then in one allocation unit. That's why we call it allocation unit. When is an RIR eligible to receive this address space from IANA? Basically, this only happens once and per allocation period, so we mustn't have received one yet in this period. And the RIR holdings are less than 50% of the current allocation unit. Should we have new RIRs? You never know. They would get one allocation unit on recognition of this RIR, or as soon as possible, as soon as there's space available to be given out to them. Now, of course, IANA does all the regular reporting on this. They do make public announcements. That's pretty straightforward. Timeline, the implementation would be immediately after ratification of this policy. Basically, that's a setup of the returned IPv4 pool. The advantages of the policy basically defines a mechanism for distribution of these of reclaimed address space. Disadvantages, we don't really see any. Now, where are we with this? This is a global policy, so it needs to go around the world, go to all the RIRs, needs to be accepted in all of them to come into effect. We have had a meeting in Manila, the APNIC meeting, where we discussed this and it was approved. Now it's subject to the last comment period over there. Last week we discussed this in ARIN, and there was a bit of a complication there, as in the ARIN region, the advisory council there took this text of the global policy and changed it a little, and there was some backing and forthing about that. And if Marla is in the room, maybe she's on the advisory council, maybe she can give some explanation there. How I understand it, we are currently looking at a rewrite of this policy text to make returns of non-legacy reclaimed space optional. So basically, what that would mean is that legacy space is subject of this policy and must be returned. If Aaron gets back any legacy space, it should go back to IANA. And if Aaron gets back any space that was allocated to Aaron by IANA before, then they might or they might not. And that's basically this policy. Questions or clarifications? If I did say something wrong, Marla, maybe you want to correct me.
Yeah, well, thanks for explaining what this is all about. I have one thing that I would like some words of clarification, whether I understood it correctly. And the way I understood phase one is that if today, well, if this goes into effect, and the day afterwards, a new LIR that has been opened 2 months ago is then closed again, has received space from a very nice and shiny and fresh /8, that space will then go back to IANA? Because space, it's reclaimed address space.
Any space would go back to the RIRs, to RIPNCC in this case. And if we would still not have reallocated it at some point in time, we would give it back to IANA.
That really means that before the pool is depleted, space that comes from your working set of /8s will already go back.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that should be very clear because that has implications. Wilfried.
Yeah, Wilfried Weber, Vienna University. First of all, I think the Erin region's modification does really make quite a bit of sense. That's my first comment. And the second comment, Axel, could you please pull up this one slide with the timelines and the 1/10th?
Which one? Tell me when you see it.
Okay, now I'll keep talking. This one here. Do I understand it correctly that this actually slows down the redistribution of reclaimed address space, even if there is quite a bit of resources being returned? My understanding is that there are just two times a year where you can apply. And sort of at a certain point in time, there is almost nothing in the pool, like in the first period. And so you get 1/10 minus something, or 1/16 or whatever. And then a big bunch of addresses comes back to IANA. And there is need for those addresses, but you had bad luck in being a little bit too early and you just got a penny. But there is a millions in the bank, and you have to wait for another half a year.
At the maximum, yes.
To reapply. Do I get that right?
That would be correct, yes. And it's not that we only can apply on the 1st of March, on the 1st of September. It's just that is the period that we set. Within that period, you get one allocation whenever.
I got that one, but the basic question is it intentional that this slows down the redistribution of reclaimed addresses, even if there is a documented need?
Depends on the parameters, what's in the pool, and when. Marla.
Marla is here. I work for Frontier Communications, but I'm here as an advisory council Erin rep. Axel pretty much cleared it up, but I'm a fan of full disclosure. So to cover it, we did optional because the main reason this policy really came about was to address legacy space. And if you're not aware, Erin holds the majority of legacy space. And a big chunk that people are hoping will come back from the DoD. So that's really why this is here. We talked with the authors last week in, where the heck were we, San Antonio? And the authors agreed with us that really this is about legacy and that any other space should be taken out of it. They were trying to get to the other IIRs to change the text from what we discussed to actually make it legacy only everywhere. But they just wasn't enough time. So it passed in AFNIC as is. So that would leave us now really still looking at the same text we currently have, which is to write optional for other space and leave it as legacy only. We do have other concerns as well that not all RIRs have justification required in all their policies, and we're not a big fan of handing back address space if it's not going to be properly justified for usage. And so that's another contention that we're working with. We're doing our best to try and figure out how to work with everybody and give back address space, but there are just our outlying policies that affect this one, and we're trying to get there as fast as we can.
Yeah, I would like to support the statement you make that it is mostly about legacy space, this whole idea of the policy. If you go to places like Geneva and talk to lots of people there, they will tell you that the RIRs are doing a fairly acceptable job of what they're doing now. But of course, the Americans hold all that address space, and that is just so unfair. So having something like this might also be seen as the RIRs doing their job as stewards and looking out for that stuff.
Thank you.
Olaf Nordling, ICANN, and just an observation on the perhaps trivial matter, but well, the title of the policy proposal is exactly the same as the now global policy that's currently in force, which is perfectly logical because it's going to be the successor. But in the meantime, and if it's adopted, pre-depletion and it's supposed to replace the current policy. Post-depletion, it will nevertheless have an effect because you have the return rules and all of that. So wouldn't it be advisable to perhaps add a qualifier like a simple Roman II or something of the sort, just to avoid confusion?
That might be a sensible thing to do.
Leo?
Hi, Leo Vergara, ICANN too. I just wanted to state that we as in IANA, we can implement the policy. Thought it was probably worth putting that on the record.
Yeah, thanks. I would actually like to hear somebody else from our region to comment on, well, do our region like this proposal or not? Or do we want to change anything?
Good morning.
Okay, I think, well, I'm not in the awkward situation that I want to say something about the policy and have to take my working group chair off.
You might have a co-chair, right?
Okay, so he's the chair now. I think the change that Aaron is discussing on making non-legacy space optional would avoid having quite some operational overhead working with the fresh space that you have, and that you have procedures on how to reclaim and reallocate, reassign to people. If that all of a sudden starts going away in chunks right in the middle of a /8, this is, I'm sure that registration services is not really being happy about it. So for the legacy space, I think that there should be a must, or this is a way forward. But for the non-legacy space, I like the Aaron change. Maybe somebody from registration service can actually say a few words about that. Do I see someone? Yeah, Alex, maybe you can.
Alex Naho, RIPNCC. Looking at our current backend systems, you have a good point, because returning blocks in the middle of our /8s to the IANA would be difficult. But we are currently working on re-implementing the backend systems, which should be finished by about the end of the year. And then this would actually not be an operational issue.
Okay, thank you. So from the mechanics, we could do either way, and we just go for what you think most logical. Since this needs to be a global policy, it needs to be aligned. So if Aaron goes for optional, then we can as well go to optional.
Yeah, just to be on the record, I also think that at this point in time we should avoid punching holes into the PA blocks for quite a few different reasons. And as I'm hearing other policy proposals like yesterday, where there is the argument we need to do something because we got the routing problems, unless we do stupid things. I think this is again one of those situations where we should try to be consistent, because I do not expect anyone to, within a short time frame, react to updating filters to accommodate one of those small blocks that have gone back and forward and reverse DNS delegation and all different kinds of different things.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this is appropriate at that point in time. I've got a logistics question just as well regarding to phasing out the existing policy, but we might do that afterwards.
Yeah.
Hans-Peter?
Hans-Peter Holen from Wismar IT. I was just trying to understand what the advantage would be for RIPNCC freeing up a /16 in the middle of a /8, returning it to IANA, and then Aaron requests address space and get that one, and then Aaron frees up some other at some other point in time, gives that to IANA, and RIPE requests a /16 and gets that. I mean, this really doesn't make sense, does it? I can see if some region returns a lot of address space and some other regions are in need of address space. This makes sense. But we need to figure out how to make this a sensible policy.
Yes. I agree, and I think the option to, or the thought of making this mandatory for legacy space and optional for other space is entirely reasonable. We should also keep in mind that this is basically maybe addressing, what do you say, ultimate fairness in the very end of IPv4 address space. This will only come into place after IANA has run out, after they have allocated the last 5/8s to the various RARs. By then, and actually right now, we should be deploying IPv6 anyway, so this shouldn't be really, really that relevant. It's one of those policies that demonstrate good stewardship on behalf of the RARs, that give us a way to continue allocating bits of IPv4 space, should that really be necessary. And basically, I think we all hope that it won't be used, because we are all happy on IPv4, IPv6 anyway.
For this?
This time it's not a clarification. I have a question because I'm a little confused myself. about the phasing out of the existing policy, and there was another question about that as well. My understanding, this policy, global policy, if accepted, would be in effect only after IANA pool depletes. So the current existing policy will not be applicable anymore. Am I right?
Maybe I wasn't entirely clear about this. If we all agree and this global policy is ratified by the ICANN board in the end, then phase one comes into action, and prior to depletion, IANA will set up this pool to receive address space, and actually, yes, the RARs will start to return address space to IANA.
Okay, thank you.
And after they run out of the current regular V4 address space, then they will start allocating from this in phase two. Sorry, I wasn't entirely clear there.
Any other comments?
Yeah, Wilfried Weber once again. Just this logistics question, but that's maybe something for the address supporting organization to find out how to put an existing global policy to rest, by either updating it, extending it with those provisions, so then it remains in effect and each and every policy can be modified. And I think also a global policy can be modified like our RIPE policies can. Or if we really want to put it at rest and replace it at a certain point in time, then we probably have to sort of think about how to do that properly. Yeah. I'm not sure whether this would require sort of the same process, like getting rid of a policy completely, whether that would actually require the same logistics steps like putting a proposal. I simply don't know.
My simplistic way of doing this, and I haven't much thought about this, is to do as it says here. Let IANA run out of the current pool. Once they run out, the old policy can be put on the shelf and forgotten. Whether we fully formally terminated or modified, I don't know, I would just forget about it and put this one into use, and then that's that. Again, we can do additional administrative stuff there as well to make it really, really clear, and title changes and stuff, version numbers maybe. Alors.
Alain Bidron, France Telecom. I think the intention is very good, but is there a sufficient legal basis for the resolution of registry to reclaim legacy space from current holders? So the legal part.
Yes. I'm not sure, and that depends on the situation in the various regions. Basically, this, as I see it, would be as we've reclaimed space before, basically calling people, asking them whether they use it, and they voluntarily more or less return it.
Due to time constraints, I would like to close the microphones now.
Thank you.
Thank you, and if I judge this correctly, I think we should go forward with the Erin version of the proposal and try to get consensus on that one. So that's what we'll do.
Well, I had to give the microphone to Sander for calling up, wrapping up things, as I had an opinion, so don't let this confuse you. The next thing on our list is an old proposal, which we still haven't reached consensus on. That's Philip Smith on the use of the last slash eight. And immediately afterwards, we go to the presentation of a new proposal for the use of the last slash eight by Alain Bidron. And then we will discuss both proposals together, since they both target the use of the last slash eight. And I see them as incompatible, so we can have only one of them, or we, well, need to sort of find a compromise between both and then go forward with that. But we definitely cannot have both at the same time. Philip, thank you.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Yes, as I say in the title here, this is the second version of the final slash eight proposal. Rather than going through this in stupendous detail as I did in Dubai, I'll point out some of the changes and just quickly go through the key points of the proposal. So the changes from version one are removing the distinction between new and existing LIRs. Well, it was basically duplication, because we describe what the policy would be with new LIRs, describe what it would be with existing LIRs, and of course it was exactly the same. So rather than trying to define what a new LIR was and what an existing LIR was, we just removed it and just said LIRs. There was some confusion on the list and in Dubai about, well, whether LIRs could get one or two or more allocations from it. That was probably more my bad choice of words in the actual document. So I've actually made it very clear that it's one allocation from this slash eight. And also in the text, I've updated what the status of similar policy proposals are in other registry regions. So just quickly running through it. So how the NCC is going to handle the final slash eight worth of address space that they have. This was all inspired, I mean, I started all this off in the APNIC region. It was inspired by the global policy where IANA would allocate a slash eight to each RIR. Of course, that's all been ratified and happened. This policy proposal does not address that slash eight. It just addresses the final slash eight worth of address space that the NCC holds. Details, so LIRs would get NCC's minimum allocation from the slash eight, regardless of what their needs are. And that minimum allocation is whatever is enforced at the time the LIR comes for addresses. And they can only get one allocation from this. There's also the slash 16 reserve for future use. Don't know what that future use is. If there's no future use that's needed, then this 16 just goes back into the pool to be used as per the previous point. Arguments for, then we have a special policy for the final slash eight, which really all this tries to do is to avoid the risk of one or two organizations consuming the entire slash eight with a well-justified and well-crafted application. Arguments against, I suspect there are quite a few. Listed a couple of the main ones here. Of course, some organizations say, well, we need loads and loads of V4 addresses because we're rolling out some new network infrastructure. But as I say here, the final slash eight is not really intended for as a solution to growth of these organizations, but it's really intended for the transition to V6. And yes, there's a chance that some organizations could get busy and set up multiple registrations for LIRs with their NCC. There isn't really any mechanism to stop anybody doing that now, so I'm not proposing that this policy proposal should try and address that one. And that's pretty much it. I guess questions come later on.
So we go now directly to Alain, who has also volunteered to present his approach to the last slide. It's all up there already. And then we do a joint discussion about what the RIPE community wants.
Okay, this is, good morning everybody. This is the proposal regarding the use of Final Slash 8 in a way to facilitate IPv6 deployment. So some reference to what we heard some time ago with Jeff Houston presentation. We all know the story of what IPv4 depletion, the IANA we allocate the last slash 5 slash 8 to 5 regional registries. This policy is not approved, and the regional registries have to define a policy on the use of this last slash 8. This happened in Paris, that's why I took this reference, and good news, all on board the train survived, so we have some hope. The issue we have to address is at the time of exhaustion, IPv4 resources will still be required for new entrants and existing local registries in order to support legacy IPv4 services. So I think we need a solution in order to ensure that access to this limited amount of addresses is in place for this transition period. As we know, the transition period will be rather long, so we need a solution available for a sufficient period of time. The second issue we have to address is, as Philippe indicate, some specific concerns related to fairness in the context of allocation of the last IPv4 resources at regional level, and we can refer to Daniel Karenbeck's presentation during the last meeting in Dubai. One response to these issues is a run-out fairly proposal. An additional response could be this proposal to encourage IPv6 deployment. We refer to two overarching principles. We know that IPv6 is the only perennial solution, and we think this policy, so on the use of the last slash 8, should be a catalyst for IPv6 deployment. The intention here is not to stretch the lifetime of IPv4, but a way for IPv6 adopters to have a window to the legacy space, to the legacy IPv4 environment. So, to create some incentive through this proposal to IPv6 deployment and not to extend the life of IPv4. The second overarching principles on which this proposal is based is that allocation and assignment should be based and justified on well-documented needs. So the proposal itself, the last slash 8 is reserved to encourage IPv6 deployment. So allocation and assignment will be done in accordance with existing IPv4 allocation and assignment policies for the right operation, nothing new. Needs will be have to be expressed to the RIPE NCC. And we introduce in that policy additional requirements for existing local registries. We must demonstrate that requirements for the migration to IPv6, as an example, like indicated in RFC 5211, are met. So there is some requirement for IPv6 deployment. For new local registries, we need to have in parallel a request for an initial IPv6 allocation or assignment in order to ensure that the solution put in place by the requester is an IPv6 solution as a long-term solution, but the objective is to provide
some bit IPv4 addresses to allow for communicate with the IPv4 world. Second point is that as this policy must provide addresses for long term, one solution could be to downscale allocation and assignments by a factor of 64. It means that the minimum allocation should be downscaled to /27. Similar proposal in other region. The closer is the, I think, the Arin one. The objective is, this policy is approved. The objective is, in my point of view, similar. There is the same incentive for V6 deployment, and the minimum allocation size is /28. And up to now, only a /10 block is dedicated to this use. APNIC, the proposal is now approved and implemented. The objective is similar, but I don't think it is clearly based on needs, and I don't see any incentive for V6 deployment in that proposal. The size of the of this minimum allocation size in force at time allocation is 22, so the size allocation is 22. LACNIC, only for new entrants, and there is a prefix from /28/22, and AFRENIC, there is a draft proposal, there is an incentive for IPv6 deployment, and the prefix is downscaled to /23. Possible objection, what I heard is first, routing impact. This will potentially create a lot of entries in the routing table, new entries. Why it is viewed like that is that the downscaling factor we offer a lot of possibilities for small allocation. But clearly, I think the downscaling factor will only limit the volume of addresses allocated or assigned. To limit this volume to what is really needed in this specific use. I think the growth of routing table will be proportional to the growth of new ISPs, PA holders, and use of multi-homing as today. It is based on needs. And the number of entries is not linked to the space or the volume of prefix that should be allocated, but to the real needs, and those needs will be checked by the RIPE NCC. In addition to that, I think that the use of sparse allocations techniques may limit the impact. Clearly, it is not a one-time process. We could have an initial allocation and further allocations if the needs are here. And this is on long term. So requesters should come back to the RIPE NCC that could evaluate the use of the first prefix allocated and assign or allocate another prefix if needed and if the requirements are met. Filtering its use, again, the downscaling factor. As allocation will be made from a specific /8, I think it will be maybe easier to adapt filtering policies, and of course, filters may be adapted to this minimum allocation. Okay, that's it.
Thanks, Alain, for presenting your ideas. Please don't run away. I think it would be useful to have Philip and Alain available, and then get feedback from the audience and try to figure out how to join these. Don't run away. I think it would be useful if you both would stay up here. George.
George Michelson from APNIC. I'm going to ask a question which is possibly off to one side of this policy, and it doesn't materially go to the heart of what you're trying to do, but it is a concern that is in my mind. The hostmasters in the registries essentially apply objective processes currently to assess what people get based on an application process. But that's predicated on they're being adequate resource to meet their justification. And the regime that you are moving into with these proposals essentially is one where people will be able to justify far more redress than you can give them. And that brings to my mind this question of subjectivity. What objective aspects in these policies will be available to guide the process of determining what is an appropriate response to give someone in that regime where their justification is so much higher than the available resource? Do you feel you have ideas which can address this? Because I worry that the hostmasters are going to be placed in a very difficult position about having to make subjective measures between competing applications. Does that make sense as an observation?
No.
Randy?
Randy Bush, IIJ. No, it doesn't, George. The proposal says that they get, they specifies what they get. No judgment. They get, in APNIC today, they get A/22, fertig.
So it's just, it's a complete given that there's no subjective aspect. That's fine.
There is none. Yeah. One per customer, this size, fits all. It's painted blue and has no windows.
Regarding my proposal, that's why we made a reference to this RFC, because this is an example, clear example of criteria regarding IPv6 deployment that are objective and could be used by those masters to appreciate if the request is variable or not.
Wilfred, please.
Hi, it's Andy Davidson from NetSumo and LUNAP. If the policy, if the community meets a consensus on a policy and decides it's a good idea, why are we waiting until we've only got one more /8 left before putting it into action? Can we start this earlier if it's a good policy that we're building together? Additionally, will this policy also count for any allocations that are received after the last /8 is used? For example, these addresses that are going to go back to IANA and then come back to RIPE again and then be assigned further in the future, are these rules going to govern those assignments and allocations as well?
Answering the second bit, that's a good question. I started all this before we even had that idea of taking address space back, so I don't know. What should it be? The first bit, well, as I said in the presentation, it was inspired by the registries getting a final /8 from the IANA, which they all, well, I mean, that's all been ratified. And so I based it on, well, once the registries have a /8 left, then let's do this. As for the size, I mean, I've no opinion, but I say the inspiration is from the final /8.
Wilfried. Yeah, Wilfried Weber again. I think it's very reasonable to think about sort of cutting up the remaining stuff into smaller pieces and trying to give those pieces to as many different entities as possible, instead of sort of being overwhelmed by one bigger request. That's sort of in support of the general idea to manage that last /8. The basic problem I'm having with the proposal to tie access to the remaining address space to a particular application, parentheses being IPv6, I'm having a problem with that. I don't think that resource distribution policies should favor one particular application or one particular environment to be used in over other ones. Because unique IP resources are just sort of a piece of technology. And the product you build on top of those should still be your own decision and not the decision of the big global capital I internet service providers. Because what this actually does is sort of to limit access to the resources to those capital I internet ISPs who intend to deploy IPv6. I can imagine that there is a very good reason to get the small block of IP addresses, for example, if you want to install a management system in a mid-sized city for a metro system. You might want to have IP addresses, you might want to have globally unique IP addresses, but it doesn't make sense to do IPv6 for the global internet and having 200 or 2,000 customers. Or no customers these days, but just to give you the idea. It's a matter of sort of limiting or not with the method of the policy, usability of those global resources for a particular type of application or not. We should be consciously make that decision.
Let's have Randy and Alex. Randy, please.
Randy Bush, IJ again. I just realized, I have something to say, but first, I realize I should state conflict of interest. First of all, I'm a co-author of the proposal in APNIC with Philip, and secondly, is I'm co-chair of the APNIC address policy. Philip, originally, when the 1/8 teach registry proposal came out, said, why are we doing this if we don't know what we're going to do with that 1/8? And that's what this proposal addressed in APNIC. The idea is also, at least from my part, that whether the world goes V4, V4 NAT, horrible, bad, evil, or it goes to IPv6, new entrants, new people coming in at the edge are going to need a little bit of V4 to talk to the V4 internet. And so the idea is to take a nice chunk of address space that'll last, because if you slice it up nice and small, will last for many years letting new people in. This has some implications to some of the questions that were just asked. The first question is, should we do this starting now? I think many people will be unhappy doing this now, and in fact, if you do this to the 1/8, and you chop it up into 24s or 22s or 27s, you will have enough to last for 10, 15, 20 years. So you don't need to take other space now before, and the space that is returned and recycled through the IANA or the ITU or whoever also doesn't need to be put into this because you have enough of a pool to meet the goal. Right, that chopping up that 1/8 will do it. And I agree with Wilfred very much that making sure that the people who use it go to the right church is not a very interesting thing.
Thanks, Randy. Alex, I think that's a comment from Jabber, is it?
Sorry?
Is it you or is it Jabber?
It is me.
Please.
Alex Lehove, Ripe NCC. From the point of view of evaluating requests by the IP resource analysts, it would be helpful that policies which include any requirements for address space any requirements that an LAR demonstrates some kind of transition to IPv6, it would be helpful if that policy would actually specify what this means.
It has some words referring to RFC.
Yes, if there would be a clear RFC mentioned in the policy, that would be extremely obvious.
It's actually in there, but
yes.
Point taken.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, sorry.
Andrei Rojewski, in personal capacity. A few remarks. I think what I see as an important factor in the second proposal that really stimulates deployment of IPv6. I think that's important. I think it's not a religious issue, but I think internet can develop in many different ways when we run out of IPv4 addresses. And some ways and some architectures that can be developed may change fundamentally the internet as we see it now. Another remark is that in the second proposal, I think, if I understand it correctly, it is based on the very same principles as we do address space allocation now. The downscaling factor of 64, it just says that if you have a need for /21 and you can demonstrate this need, it is assumed that multiplexing technologies will be used in the future when we run out of IPv4 address space, and sharing of IP addresses will be very common. And therefore, If you have a need for /21, /27 should satisfy this need. So evaluation from this point of view should be pretty straightforward. And maybe the final remark is that in Philip's proposal, I think it's not a final proposal. It actually implies that there will be an emerging proposal that will minimize the minimum allocation size. Because if we go with this proposal right now, with the size of, with a minimum allocation that RIPE-NCC allocates, you will hardly cover the existing LIR base, and there will be very little left for the newcomers. But all in all, I think none of proposals is perfect. But I think there is nothing perfect when we run out of IPv4 address space. So when looking at those proposals, we also have to compare it to alternatives. What happens if there is no proposal whatsoever?
Okay, I would really like to hear a few more voices from non-working group chairs, non-NCC members, non-address support council members, from just the generic community. There has to be someone in here who has an opinion on this. Okay, this is being difficult. Max.
Yes, Max Tuliev, maybe I say something about it. I think we should switch our focus to other side. Now we should develop the rules of IP version 4 market that will be that actually there is IPv6 market, but after this, after IPv4 will be a valuable resource, there will be a big and great market. So better is let's discuss what we can do to make it market white, not black. That's my opinion.
Yeah, thanks for that, but that sort of, I think that sort of missed the point. We can define the rules for the market independent on the rules of the last /8. So on the topic at hand, what do you think? Should we abandon both? Should we go for one of them? Should we merge them?
It's very simple. I think we should do nothing. Give this final /8 as usually, and after that, market starts.
That was a very clear statement. Okay, it spurred discussion, so more voices, please.
Martin Lis-Peterson, AirWire. Basically, I think it should be kept as simple as possible. In general, yeah, the one thing, the first proposal that was presented, Philip, and I'd say that kind of does it. Like, everybody can get one allocation of the last /8. That's it. But beyond that, I don't think there has to be done much more than that.
Okay, thank you. Other voices. We have plenty of time today, so really, don't be shy.
Hello, my name is Sylvie Hartzig from BSI. I think the usage of the /8 should be used to facilitate, to encourage the usage of IPv6. I think it's hard enough for the networks and the providers to migrate to IPv6, and I think it should be encouraged to use it and to connect the IPv6 to the IPv4 world. That's my opinion.
Okay, so from those that are awake, I don't have a very clear direction. We really have had voices going for do nothing, go for the simple one size fits all and no V6 strings attached, and promote V6. I will now try something, and I'm not sure whether I'm going to regret it. I will try to get a show of hands which direction to take with this. First of all, if you're awake, please show your hand. This was quite an interesting exercise. I think we got about 90% of the people in the room. But that's good. I was expecting a bit more hangover from yesterday. So I'm going to ask three questions now. The first question is, do nothing special. The second question is, go with something that's similar to Philip's proposal and work out the details. But the main difference is no V6 promotion attached. And the third question is, go with something similar to Anel's proposal, work out the fine print. And the main point is, it has V6 promotion attached to it. So, show of hands, roughly. Who thinks that the best way forward is not do anything special with the last /8? Sandra, could you make a note? Something like 5 to 6 people. Who thinks that we should have a special policy, but that special policy should not have V6 promotion attached to it? That would be Philip. Something like about, I don't know, 15, 20. Okay, the last question, who thinks that if we have a special, that we should have a special policy, and that special policy should take V6 promotion into account? That's more. Yeah, I think that's about, of all people that actually raised their hand in response to the specific questions, that was about a little bit more than half of them. So it very much looks like we go forward with Alain's proposal and work out the specific mechanics on the mailing list then. Is that the way forward? Okay, there's one last comment.
Hi, Elvis Vela from the RIPNCC, jabbering today. There's a comment from Jakub Jermak, I'm sorry if the spelling is wrong, from Silesian University of Technology. He says that he is in favor of the first proposal. It sufficiently spreads the chance of getting allocation for every market entering LIR. Also, it doesn't put so much burden on the routing table size. So this was Jakub Jermak.
Yep. Okay, thank you. We will need to take it to the mailing list anyway and form the decision on the mailing list. Thanks for your comments. Thanks to you guys for... Philip, don't run away. It's you again anyway. Thanks to you for presenting your ideas and driving this forward. And now it's the last proposal for today, which is actually Philip again with the historic address space. Efficient use of historic allocations.
Okay, me again. So this is, again, second version. I did the first version of this in Dubai, took the feedback from the meeting and from the mailing list, and revised appropriately. So again, as before, I'll just quickly go through the changes rather than going through the whole details of the presentation. So the changes from the first version, I've removed the word historical. And actually, the word historical caused a fair amount of discussion and debate on what on earth historical actually meant. To me, as an English speaker, it was pretty obvious what it meant, but I suppose trying to actually write it down in the text got really, really difficult, and the discussion was really, really difficult as well. I also updated the status from the other registry regions. Anyway, so what's this about is that all addresses will be allocated, as we know, 2011, 2012, something like that. Again, emphasizing the importance of responsibly distributing the remaining V4 addresses. Current problem is that LARs who are applying for new V4 allocations only have to declare past allocations they have received from the NCC. They don't have to say anything about any other allocations. Situation in other registry regions, APNIC, ARIN, and LACNIC consider all previous address assignments and allocations that have been made when they're doing new allocations. EFRINIC doesn't do anything. At least it doesn't do doesn't consider address space that has not been allocated by EFRINIC. So the details, quite simple. NCC will now consider all V4 addresses that LIR holds when assessing further allocations. So that would bring it into line with what APNIC, ARIN, and LACNIC do. Arguments for just ensures efficient use of scarce V4 address space resources to the fullest extent possible. Use of all V4 addresses will follow current best practices for address management. Remaining V4 pool can be allocated to LARs that have a genuine need, and emphasizing responsible usage of V4 resources. Arguments against, well, I don't know if this is really an argument against, but organizations will be unable to hold V4 address space while at the same time getting more V4 address space from the NCC's pool. And that's it.
Thank you, Philip, for reminding us what this is about, since it has been there for a while. One counter-argument I've heard is that people might prefer not to actually register their legacy address space in the database if it means that this address space is then used against them in the future. So that registration data might become worse if we do something like that. Is there something that has been mentioned in the APNIC region? And if yes, what was the opinion on that?
Trying to remember back, I can see the argument. If Randy can help my memory or not, I think it was mentioned, but I don't think it was really considered a major issue. I mean, people can just choose to disappear in any case, even today.
Okay, I see Randy nodding. Do you want to actually say something?
No, just in case you want to beat me up further, I believe Philip is quite correct.
Okay, please, comments from the audience, Wilfried.
Just a question for clarification. The sort of considering the historical legacy, whatever you call it, address space of an LIR, looking at our situation, is the LIR meant to be exactly that one organization, which would fit easily, for example, for a big telco doing that stuff? Or would it also include the customers? Like in our situation, as a national research network, we operate an LIR with PA space, and we distribute addresses to our customers from that pool. But we have a additional set of customers having legacy address space, and sort of that is not formally part of the LIR operations. So I think we have to, or I need to do some homework to understand what the terminology really means. Because my feeling is that we should actually take into account each and every organization applying for additional address space to sort of to disclose their historical resource holdership before applying for additional ones. Or am I completely off track?
Well, the intention really was that, if an organization has got, say in your case, you have affiliated organizations that have address space, is that address space you, or say if the organization disappears and that address space comes back to you?
That no, would be because it's legacy stuff.
Right, so it's not your address space then. So I wouldn't see why you would have to declare it in this case.
Okay, then I'd like to turn it around and sort of ask to think about extending that thing to not just applying to LIRs and PA space, but sort of to all organizations holding resources.
I was going to try and do one bite at a time, I think.
Okay. Randy?
Oh, well, he's polite, so Felice first.
Yeah, I do it occasionally. Just to surprise you.
Felice Yilmaz, Rappen CC. About the point, your first point, I think we are having a disparity there from APNIC to RIPE policies. I think the issue there is that in RIPE region, according to our policies, Rappen CC is looking at 80% rule for LAR allocations, because the LARs are the ones who come back to ask for further space, and there's a continuity in our registration services that we follow up on their usage. While in PI world, for the PI address space, there is no such continuity. And if you want to have that, then that is, I think, a new policy for PI space to be evaluated for each organization who holds PI space, that, you know, there should be a usage over, you know, a similar policy applied over them as well.
Randy and then Jabra.
Randy Bush. Oh, Jabra's disadvantage. They should get it if you're jabbering. Keep life simple. All this is trying to say is, when considering your utilization, consider all you hold, not just the blue stuff, but the pink stuff too. Fertig.
Yes, but then we need to agree on what the pink stuff is, which is basically what Wilfried was.
It's the stuff you hold.
Yep.
Right? That's it. The stuff you hold. So if it's some sister organization, you don't hold it. If it's a child who holds it, you don't hold it. If it's somebody on the moon, you don't hold it. It's what you hold. All of what you hold.
Very definite clarification.
Okay, Elvis Vela from RIPE NCC, again Jabber. Per Heldal had a comment. He says that it is a mistake to adopt the legacy term from ARIN policies. Network operators are either members of the community or they are not. And this, and he also said that we can add that this is a general comment valid for all policies.
So I take this to mean that we should go into the wording of the policy and see whether it really fits our terms that we use in RIPEland.
A member is not legacy or not. An address block is legacy or not. There's a confusion in that statement from Jabber.
I still think, also based on the experience from other proposals, that it might be a useful exercise to check every single word in there, whether something has slipped in that other regions use, and we might not use the term in exactly the same way. I have nothing specific that I think needs changing, but it would be prudent to take a close look. I have heard questions for clarification. I have not heard clear directions whether we should go for it or whether we should not go for it. So what are we going to do? I think we will have to do a new round on the mailing list. Take into account the few comments that we have received so far, maybe clarify the text, and then do another round of review on the list and see whether we get enough comments to have a clear idea of does the community want to go for it or not.
Yes, there is updated text that goes with this. So I think, you know, if the list can see the updated text, I think we'll clarify some of the issues we had in version one.
Then we have a way forward.
Yep.
Put V2 on the list,
yep.
Put it up for comments, and then see what will come out of it. thank you for the work you've put into this. Thanks for coming up and waiting for the tomatoes. Some applause, please, for Philip. Being up there on Thursday morning, 9 o'clock after the M6 party is not so easy. That's for the formal part of the address policies discussion so far. So all the proposals that are in the system have a number, have explicit text and so on are covered. We have 10 minutes left before the coffee break, and I'm not going to let you go. We have at least one sort of not yet fully formed policy proposal. That's Andy Davidson. Would you come here and just take the microphone and state the idea of what you're trying to change and how to tackle it? And then we need some feedback from you on whether we want to go there or not.
Thank you very much. Andy Davidson from NetSumo and LANAP. The community has recently passed the IPv6 PI policy. Thankfully, and we're all very happy that we're able to do end-user assignments using IPv6 with PI again. That's great news. However, there's a clause in the new policy that's been formed which states an LIR can never, ever have IPv6 PI. And I think that that's possibly a mistake to leave in there because it's not a very future-proof policy. And also, it means that your need for addresses is determined and measured based on whether you have a contract with the NCC or not. And I think that's quite a dangerous precedent to accidentally leave in the policy. It means, now, I don't believe that people should be able to get PI where they should have PA. It will be for your infrastructure, not for end user assignments. But in my opinion, whether you have a contract with the NCC or not should not determine your eligibility for addresses. Any comments?
On the mailing list, when discussing the PI policy, we actually received comments to that extent, and it was agreed that we should go forward with the policy for the time being and not wordsmith it any further, even if we are not completely happy with the details, to have a policy and then go and change it. And Andy has basically volunteered to pick up there. So we have already some backing from the community to go for that. I would like to hear some more voices.
Martin, this is Peterson, AirWire. First of all, the limitation with a LIR not being able to get PI space, I can't really see that being a problem, because what do you want with PI when you have PA?
Okay, you might need to make an assignment, you might need to make an announcement using a completely different routing policy for special case parts of your infrastructure. So if somebody invents a protocol in the future that allows for better localization of content, or if I want to do regional announcements for some of my services, for example, I can't announce that as part of my PA, or I might have to de-aggregate my PA excessively to do that. So, and also, this is not for end user assignments, this is just for parts of your own infrastructure that need an individual routing policy. And actually, the very earliest drafts of my proposed change do state that the LIR must announce this differently and must give the PI back if the requirement for a unique routing policy ceases.
In theory, you should be able to get PA for that. Then it would make more sense to allow for a smaller PA assignment that you specifically register as such. As a LIR, you should not have a need for PI.
Smaller PA doesn't sound like that's possible, because it's aggregatable. If I have a PA that's a slash 32 and a PA that's a slash 48, the 48 isn't aggregatable. It's the same. It feels like PI at that point.
Sorry to interrupt you there. I want to directly answer that. The PA policy definitely does not allow this. As it stands today, the PA policy says one DIR, one block, period. no provisioning for another block.
Yes, that.
And it, in the end, it doesn't really matter what the label on it says. If it's something the Lira wants to have for themselves, it's just a block of addresses. So what sort of tag is attached to it doesn't make a difference in the big scheme of things.
Nope.
So tackling this in the PI policies actually get us there much easier than reopening the question of who and when are you eligible to get a second PA block while the first block is not full. We had that discussion yesterday, and it was difficult. No, I see him still standing there. And
it's just then the other thing with the contractual clause, where that needed to be there with the PI. That obviously, if you want a LEAR to get PI space, not the LEAR already has a contract with the NCC.
I'm not saying that Alert shouldn't have a contract with the NCC. I'm saying that whether or not you have a contract with the NCC, that isn't a fair reason to judge whether you're eligible for address space and resources or not. This should be addressed on need, not whether you're in the club or outside the club.
Yeah, but the way PI is now, you don't need to be in the club.
But if you join the club later on, you lose your right to keep the PI, which is also dangerous.
Yeah, okay, I can see that point. Yes.
All right. Hi, Elvis Vala from the Ripe NCC, relying the Jabber again. There's a comment from Jakub Biermak. I quote, there is also a case when LIR purchases company that has already IPv6 PI. What happens then should also be taken into consideration, end of quote.
Yeah, there are some words in the draft, and we've had some discussions with policymakers, and I'm trying to collect feedback on that idea now, so I'm sure that's going to be something that's discussed on the mailing list. But we have some ideas, we just don't know if they're the best ones yet.
Yep. Jordi.
Jordi Palet, Consul Intel. As the author of the IPv6 PI policy, and trying to remember all the different conversations in the mailing list and the existing conversations, not only in this region, also looking globally, I think it will be much easier and much more coherent to actually allow an ISP to have different blocks with different announcements, even if the first block is not already used. I don't know, maybe it's my personal view, but I will feel more comfortable that way, because looking at different possibilities, development of new technologies and so on, and people that it's already asking for allowing deaggregation, it makes more sense. But again, it's my personal view. And at the same time, it will allow us to keep the existing IPv6 provider independent policy, which seems more or less right for everyone. At least it passed after 3 years. No need to touch it again. While already there is a need to touch the existing provider address policy, need modifications, because some people is already asking for deaggregation, right?
We basically have to change something to allow for deag, or we have to change something to allow an LIR to get a smaller address block that
exactly,
can be routed independently.
Exactly.
And I think that the clause that's in there now that says if you're an LIR you can't have something, I think that that's a bad precedent to leave, and I think that's a worse problem to leave in the clause, because then in the future people might look at that as a precedent to say, well, we can treat LIRs differently because we do on this document, so we should perhaps on this document. And I think that if as a community we believe that your need for addresses is determined by what you're going to use them for, then we should clean up that line in the policy, in my opinion. I think we have the same outcome, but I think that we have a different conversation about how to do it.
Okay.
I think what I'm hearing from that is that we are not completely in agreement on what the existing policy is supposed to have as criteria. Like not being an LIR actually being supposed to mean don't use this space to number your customers, okay, and not actually having anything to do with the type of organization, but with the way the addresses are used. So this is not as straightforward as I assumed it would be. But we have received valuable input, and I think we should go now to the list and get more feedback and then make a formal proposal.
Yes.
There's need to change something. Whether the output will be, or what the output will be, remains to be seen.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for coming up. Thanks for getting the feedback and presenting the idea. An applause, please. Okay, we are coming to the end. We had the discussion about extra 32s to providers yesterday, and we also had the discussion on maybe we shouldn't solve this in address policy, but we should solve this in routing, or we should solve this in IPv6. And the working group chairs of routing and IPv6 got together with me and stole address space from today's plenary, not address space. Well, anyway, same thing, different coordinate system. So on your meeting plan, you have RIPE 20 years today at 4 p.m., and the first half of that is likely going to be a discussion on this specific topic. Do we want to permit deaggregation? Do we want to permit additional 32s to providers? What's the way out of the crisis? Who's maintaining the internet routing police and permits what sort of prefixes are permitted and what are not, and so on. This is today 4 p.m. in here. That's for the pure address policy working group for this meeting. Thanks for being here at early in the morning after the AMSIX party. Thanks for your input, and enjoy the day and the evening at the party tonight. And we are right on time for the coffee break.
Just so you know, it's not a fantasy, I want to return some address space. And you know about how long this will keep IPv4 going.